There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herrington deal. Chris Herrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is Cut Your Hair by Pavement. Sending that out to the new look, Marcus Smart. New haircut, fresh start. That's what we're all about.
New haircut, fresh start. So you are, I take it, you're bound for Nashville right now? You're on I-40 heading east?
I am on the so-called music highway somewhere between Jackson and Nashville at the moment.
Do you have any place that you like to stop between Memphis and Nashville?
No, well, McKay's, I think I've talked about before, the big used media, like, superstore that's
in
about
Nashville.
15,
oh.
It's about 15 miles outside of Nashville, so I'm actually going to stop there on my way in. I've got a couple crates of books and stuff I can trade in, so I came prepared.
Yeah, I've done that ride, drive so many times, it's impossible to count. I don't hate it, because it's flat, it's straight, you just go, it's only 3 hours, it's not bad at all.
It's almost too short of a drive to be wanting to stop.
Yeah,
really.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't lend itself to a stop. The only time I really stop is if I'm coming from somewhere beyond Nashville find myself. And I gather there's going to be a Buc-ee's at some point. I've never been to a Buc-ee's, so I'll probably do that once. Have you been to a Buc-ee's?
I haven't, and I don't think I care. I don't know. Right. Maybe it will be a magical wonderland when I go to a Buc-ee's, but I'm not chomping at the bit. I'm not eager, which I guess that's what they do. That's what they chomp, right? It's like a beaver or something.
They chomp. Yeah. And I think that one's going to be too close to Memphis anyway, won't lend itself to a stop. I also like the fact that it's not exactly, but Jackson's basically an hour. Now, that's not exactly right. But then the Tennessee River is 2 hours. So then it has neat sort of demarcations along the way. So anyway, safe travels as you make your way to Nashville. I was reading your column, which I found immensely entertaining for all kinds of reasons. Yesterday I read it, although people can read it today. It's up. And it was a reminder of exactly how weird or disquieting last year's media day was. I told you, like, Ja wasn't even there, right? He wasn't.
Yeah, no. The foundation of the team from a play style standpoint had been like Ja Morant and Steven Adams the season before, and like Ja Morant was not there at media day, and Steven Adams was like basically saying, "I don't know if I can play." Right after, like, Zach Kleiman and Taylor Jenkins were saying he was going to play, But it sort of went off the rails, like, from moment one, really.
Yeah, I don't know if it was as bad as Chandler Parsons being perpetually injured at Media Day. That might have been the biggest bummer. After the first act, when he was first acquired, I guess, that his first Media Day didn't instill confidence to his health. But anyway, so what was the mood, such as it was? People can read the column. It was just a lot of talk. But what was the mood yesterday?
I mean, the mood was positive. The mood was positive because the mood is, like, always pretty much, except for maybe last season, always positive on Media Day, or even last season, ultimately, you know?
Right.
And so it's a time of hopes and dreams, plans and schemes, but it was not a pound the chest, you know, braggadocio, swaggering, we're going to take over the world kind of stuff. Like, people tried to lure them into that, and Zach Kleinman said something in his deal about, you know, Ja, Dez, and Jaren might be the best trio in the league. And people kept asking them to immediately would ask Ja, Dez, and Jaren about that. And they would basically say, okay, sure. But they didn't, like, you know, I almost wanted one of them to go the other way and say, like, you know, we haven't got past the second round of the playoffs, so maybe, like, you know, let's earn that a little bit. But they didn't do that. But they also didn't like, pound the table and said, yes, we're great. I mean, they just sort of went along as much as seemed feasible. But I found it to be, you know, a positive, serious sort of mood, but not one that seemed like pie in the sky. So I had generally positive feelings about the vibes yesterday.
And I thought it was interesting in the same vein that they didn't at all latch onto the "we're going to remind the world who we are" theme.
No, somebody asked John. They really, really wanted him to do that. And then when he didn't do it, they, like, asked him again and said, come on. It was basically like, come on, Ja. And basically all he would say was, like, you know, I'm happy. I'm not worried about that, all that. And he said something like, but a happy Ja is a scary Ja for some people. And that was as much as he would give.
Do you think a happy Ja is a scary Ja?
I think if Ja is in a good place physically and mentally, and he seems to be, he's going to be one of the best players in the league. So, yes.
Yes, right. So, all right, we did get some, I guess we got some, you know, some little bits of news. First, Cam Spencer, what's his deal?
Yeah, he twisted an ankle. You know, they didn't sound like it was a thing that would necessarily keep him out of opening day. I mean, Cam Spencer is one of the three, is, like, to me, almost the third three-way guy, third two-way guy. And so you don't want any more injury stuff from the Grizzlies, but a Cam Spencer turned ankle would be, like, very low on my list of concerns, you know?
Right. So, all right. Scottie Pippen Jr., what was the vibe around him and the chances that he'll become a, you know, get a roster spot anytime soon?
Well, if you read between the lines on Zach Kleinman and Scottie Pippen, you put the two together. I mean, this was not news to me. I'd basically already written this. And Zach Kleinman made it pretty clear they are not going to look outside the organization for the 14th roster spot. Like, they're not going to be signing anybody. And Pippen basically said that he's been told, like, here are the steps you need to go through for you to get that spot. And so that's sort of a confirmation of what I expected, that Pippen is in line for that roster spot, but they're not going to give it to him today. Like, they're going to give it a few weeks, probably. I think from their perspective, like, let's make sure, like, you know, there aren't other injuries that might impact our decision or, you know, what have you. And then give, like, Scottie Pippen some certain goals of what they want to see from him in training camp or preseason. But it certainly sounds like, I would guess before opening night, that he will be, unless something changes, that he'll be the 14th man.
And then keep the other spot open.
Yeah, I think they're going to keep the other spot open. I mean, once you elevate Scottie Pippen, you can replace him on the two ways. So you add another player that way. And I think, as they've done with the others, they'll be looking for a player who they think can give them minutes if needed on the Grizzlies. But I think they only got so much room under the tax. They got more than they expected with Rose retiring. But they're probably not going to go over the tax. And they don't want to spend that money just to be spending it. You want to preserve it for later in the season if you can, to give you more maneuverability either around the trade deadline or who knows. Like, maybe post-trade deadline, there's a buyout market and somebody can help you, and suddenly you're in position to give a guy more than a minimum because you got the room under the tax, you know? And so I don't think they should be spending money just because they have it right now.
And does, by the way, the sort of player that they would sign to replace Scottie Pippen Jr. sort of depend on what happens elsewhere in the roster?
I think it depends on that. It depends on, like, who's available, because at some level you want talent, right? You're not going to choose position over – you're not going to even if you won a certain position, you're not going to take a player who can't help you at that position over someone who can help you in another position. I think it would behoove them, if they can find it, to get more of a wing forward type with some size. I think that's something they're really missing. And I think one of the interesting answers that came out, which I didn't mention in my column, but one of the interesting answers that came out, I think it was a little misinterpreted by some people, was about Marcus Smart talking about Jake LaRavia. Marcus Smart was asked, like, you know, with Vince Williams out, you can't play 48 minutes. When you go to the bench, like, who's going to take those top defensive assignments on the wing? Or who's the next man up to try to take that? And I was thinking in my head, okay, Jake LaRavia should be the answer here. And he said Jake LaRavia. He wasn't saying Jake LaRavia is going to be Marcus Smart or Vince Williams. He was just saying, like, it's got to be somebody. Like, who of your available options do you want in that role? And I think that was the right answer. And so, and partly is that he's 6'8". They just don't, with Gigi Jackson and Vince Williams out, they're really missing size on the wing. And so I'd be looking at some athletic size on the wing if you could find it. Now, finding that on a two-way,
right,
who's good enough to help you, is kind of hard to do, but I'd be on the lookout for that if I were them.
Any sense, greater sense of timing on the part of either G.G. Jackson or Vince Williams?
There was really nothing on G.G. that was anything we didn't already know. On the Vince thing, Zach Klein, we just said, you know, on track, blah, blah, blah. I don't remember the wording, but it was also not really different from what we'd heard. But someone asked Vince Williams, you know, is there a chance, you know, it said that they reevaluated in 4 weeks. Is there a chance you play on opening night? And he himself said that was doubtful.
Right.
And which I think we knew. I think the hope with Vince Williams is that he appears within the first month of the season. I think there's a good chance that's the case, but he's not going to be there opening night.
And the hope with GG is December, basically.
Yeah, I think that's what people are looking at. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. It appears the Marcus Smart conspiracy theorists, as most are off base. He's got a fresh outlook and a fresh haircut. How was Marcus Smart?
Yeah, who knows? Like I said yesterday, I had no reason to believe the conspiracy theories you proposed, but I don't think, you know, him.
I was passing them along, not proposing.
Yeah, yeah.
Them.
Yeah,
go ahead.
You passed along. But I don't think him sitting at a podium and saying good stuff.
Yeah.
Who cares? Who knows, right? But he's on the team. If the Grizzlies or Marcus Smart were intent on that relationship being severed, I think he would have gotten traded this summer. And so, as far as I can tell, everything's fine on the Marcus Smart front. He had good things to say about teammates, present and former, with Derrick Rose. The idea that he's disengaged from the franchise, I don't see any particular evidence there. He also said, I know you said something about, you know, reports he wasn't playing with the guys recently. And maybe he suggested more than is true in that front, but he sort of talked about being in the gym with Zach Edey and some of that stuff. And so I think, you know, I think he's going to be in the starting lineup on opening night based on the current, you know, availability of the roster, and we'll see where it goes.
On D. Rose, Zach Kleiman did confirm that he got a call from the agent out of left field, he said. And then I think it was Desmond Bain who said that Derrick Rose said he was going to be sticking around Memphis. So do you get they were surprised, but not rocked or disappointed particularly. Is that the
Oh no, yeah, I think that's right. I think they were happy with Derrick Rose. I think they got out of Derrick Rose what they were wanting and expecting to get out of Derrick Rose. Unlike, say, the Chandler Parsons signing you referenced earlier. It was not that situation. I think they knew, maybe there were fans who had different, you know, thoughts about it. Maybe even Derrick Rose did. I think organizationally they had a certain expectation for Rose, and I think they got what they expected from Rose. I think they were happy with Rose on that basis, but I think they're fine not with Derrick Rose retiring. I think they're totally fine with that. I think it would have been, you know, more helpful to the organization if that had happened, like, you know, the day after the final media session in May, than like the week before training camp. The timing is kind of weird. But I don't think this is not some big setback that has them scrambling by any stretch.
What struck you either about Zach Edey or about what was said about Zach Edey?
There wasn't quite as much, like, you know, talking up Edey as there had been running up to media day. And maybe that's partly because people didn't, like, ask players to do that, basically. They didn't tee them up to, like, extol Zach Edey. But everyone seems real positive about Edey. He was a little bit There was one answer where he got a little light, but for the most part, it was a more serious, like, stone face, all business kind of vibe around Zach Edey than, like, the day after he got drafted, you know, which was a more of a celebratory kind of day. There were less jokes. Someone asked him about the role, you know, someone said something like, you know, a lot of rookies don't have a role set up for them as they come into to a team. You know, what do you think about that? He basically said everyone has a role on every team, and the role is to help the team win. He said, you know, he wasn't thinking about rookie of the year. He just, you know, wanted to play and help the team win. He said he, you know, lost 10 pounds, so he slimmed down to 290. He actually looks pretty slim, actually. I mean, when you're 7'5", it's easy for the weight number to get up there, right? And he's sort of a big bone 7'5", but he's not. He's not. This is not Junior Lofton, you know. He actually, I mean, right, looks in pretty good shape.
Is large though? It strikes you as large as he walks into the room?
I'm sorry. What was that again?
Is he just enormous? Like, is it striking?
I mean, he seems like when he's sitting in the chair, it seems like he's really. There's a lot of stuff folded into that little right. space. That's certainly the case.
We're just assuming he's going to be the starting center. What would be your level of surprise, and or do you think it would be a disappointment if he doesn't, if he's not the starting center?
It is true that a lot of people have assumed that without any kind of certainty or evidence to back up that assertion, that assumption. I am one of the people who has made that assumption. And I assume he's going to be the starting center. Brandon Clark has said he does not want to be a starter. And he's coming off the injury and everything, and he's not a heavy minutes guy. I think the Jaren Santi stuff is kind of interesting. It wasn't that great last year, but then again, the whole roster was a mess, so I don't know what to make of that. I would be very surprised if Zach Edey is not every night the regular starting center on the team. I'm making that assumption. No one has told me that's going to be the case. No one on the team has publicly said that's going to be the case. I'll be very surprised if that's not the case.
Do you think if he's not, it is reflective of something going wrong or slower in his development?
I mean,
in other words, does it reflect concern?
I would say day one of a rookie season, if a guy is not fully ready, that's not a red flag to me. Even a four-year guy like Zach Edey. So I would say it would be a sign that he is not as far along, that the readiness is not quite where you would like it to be. But again, I don't think that would be some enormous concern if that's the case on day one of a rookie season. You expect guys not to be ready. I think it's a different situation with him, I think, because of the 4 years of experience, because of just how good he was, you know, in college basketball, in summer league, because of the very specific skill set he brings to this very specific team. Like, I believe he's going to be the starting center, but I don't think it's going to be like some cataclysm if they say, you know, it may take a little while to let's go slower on this. I don't think that's going to be the case though.
So Brandon Clark said something about Taylor Jenkins telling Jaren he's got to play better defense or defense like he did 2 years ago, or what was that reference?
I think the specific language is important there. There's a difference between Jaren, you have to play better defense, and Jaren, we need Jaren to be better defensively. The first thing would be a Jaren thing. The second thing would be a team thing. And I think Jaren was not as impactful defensively last season. I don't think that was a Jaren thing. I think it was a team context thing. It was his usage was so high. The center situation was such a mess. It's not that Jaren needs to be better. Jaren was still really good. The Grizzlies were 12th in the league on defense last season.
Right.
How do people think that happened? That happened because of Jaren Jackson Jr.
Right.
But this is something I've already sort of written in my notes at some point when I write a Jaren column. I think in terms of impacting the Grizzlies, the best version of Jaren to impact the team will be something like 2 years ago where you dial back the offensive load and offensive usage in order to dial up the defensive effort. And you can't have everything all at once. It's kind of hard to do. I do think the best version of Jaren for the team is...
Well, there's a little bit of a blip as we lose Chris on the way to Nashville. Oh, there you are. You're back. You're back. Go ahead. Yeah.
I think the greatest impact that Jaren Jackson can have on the team, the best version of the Grizzlies as currently constructed, will be with Jaren Jackson Jr. as a defense-first player, ceding more of that offensive load to Ja Morant and Desmond Bane, and getting back to being, you know, one of the most impactful defenders in the league. And I think having Ja and Dez to take more of that offensive load back, and having Zach Edius the big center for him to work off of, will allow that to happen. But I agree. I agree with Taylor Jenkins that the best version of the Grizzlies needs Jaren defense to be the tip of the spear.
So I got more to ask you about, but I'll do that tomorrow after we talk, after you were there for the first day of training camp. But I didn't want this segment to go by without mentioning the big star stuff. You have the series at the Daily Memphian, the Essential Memphis Library, and you say Big Star's album Radio City should be in it, and that album is going to be played by a collection of artists tonight at Crosstown. Is that right, Chris? Tell me just a little bit about this.
Yeah, it's a 50th anniversary concert. I don't know if it's the exact date or anything, but the album is from 1974. So it's a 50th anniversary concert. Jody Stevens, the last living member of Big Star, who was the drummer for Big Star, will be playing with a collection of sort of acolytes of the band, more 80s, 90s alt-rock figures. Mike Mills from R.E.M. probably most prominently, but some guys from other bands, Wilco and others. And they're going to play, I think, the album in its entirety, then play some other Big Star stuff too. So that's tonight at the Crosstown Theater. And I use that as sort of a peg to do a Central Memphis Library piece on Radio City, the second of only three initial Big Star albums, three Big Star albums from the 70s. The first one, number one record, I've already put in the Essential Memphis Library. So there's actually two Big Star records in there already. It just happened to be that I had pegs for both. But Radio City, a Memphis classic from the early 70s.
You can read the piece over at the Daily Memphian. Thanks, Chris. Drive safe. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
NFL Week 5 is here. You can start with a chance for a big win on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. If you're new to FanDuel, $200 in bonus bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. That's right, $200 in bonus bets guaranteed with your first $5 bet. Thursday night football, Bucks and Falcons. Go ahead and build a quick same game parlay for that. Before you do, go over to FanDuel.com/Calkins. That's the promo code, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, to make every moment more. Must be 21 or older in present Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable. Bonus bets expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call Tennessee Red Line 1-800-889-9789. It's Tuesday. That means Fish on Friday on Tuesday. Our man in D.C. coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You sit in traffic now. But later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex Grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex Grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Charles is, of course, the author of three New York Times bestsellers, most recently One Giant Leap, about the extraordinary efforts of ordinary Americans to get us to the moon. Also a three-time winner of the Gerald Loeb Award for Excellence in Business Writing and a retired Mississippi River tugboat deckhand. He joins me now. Charles, how are you?
I'm excellent, although I got to say we are on day 11 of literally no sunshine. It's raining right now. We had sun on Saturday. So Saturday was whatever.
You should move to Memphis. We've had sun. Jeffrey Hammond, we've had sun. I think we've had sun. We'd be better to have you in studio.
We had some on Sunday, yeah.
Yeah, and we got a lot coming up. A lot of sun coming up, Charles. We'll welcome you with open arms.
I can't take seven. We're at 10 out of 11 days. We're not just like a little cloudy or overcast. We're sucked in, man. So I don't.
Well, I'll be honest. Given what's happening in North Carolina, I'm not. I don't feel real sympathy for you. Sunshine.
I thought you were going to say the opposite. Given what's happening in the world, a little overcast in your sunshine
seems appropriate.
Is an appropriate. Yeah.
That's there you go.
But before we move to all the news,
yeah.
Tomorrow, October 2nd. The start of a new year. Jews get
it's Rosh Hashanah. What's that about? What is Rosh Hashanah about?
Rosh Hashanah means head, Rosh, of the year. Ha-Shanah, Shanah is the year. A Rosh Hashanah, head of the year, the start of the new year. What do you mean, what's that about?
Well, I just wanted, listen, some of my best friends are Jewish.
I don't know.
So,
you're 63, so, you know what, it's the start
of
the Jewish
year. I know,
but
I'm trying to educate those people who don't know, Charles. This is me setting you up to explain Rosh Hashanah to them.
Rosh Hashanah, right.
Now you have me totally screwed up on the pronunciation, too. Now I'm totally screwed up.
I'm going to try and pronounce it four different ways and see if you can keep up. Rosh Hashanah.
It's the new year.
Ha,
it's the new
is
year.
Just the word the, so you don't emphasize the ha, you know?
Okay.
The H sound at the start of a word is just the word the. I'm such a scholar of Hebrew.
Why is it October 2nd?
It isn't. It changes every day, every year, according to the Jewish calendar. It doesn't follow the U.S. calendar. It follows the Jewish months. And the Jewish calendar deals with leap years by adding a whole month. I think it's every 7 years. So that's really, really complicated if you add a month rather than a day. But the really interesting question that baffles people, my wife has been married to me for yesterday, another significant milestone, 28 years.
There's some
married
sun. That's 28 years of sunshine, Charles. There's 28 years of sunshine.
That is 28 years of sunshine. That is exactly right. For her, from my perspective, no.
the occasional thunder burst, I guess.
Often point out that I actually have no idea what it's like to be married to me.
The interesting thing I think that
baffles non-Jews is why do Jewish holidays start at sundown? So all day tomorrow is just a regular day, and then at sundown, one of the big holidays of Judaism, Rosh Hashanah, starts. And Passover starts at sundown. Every Jewish Shabbat starts, the Sabbath starts at sundown on Friday. And here's why. It's really simple. I'm actually looking at the opening chapters of Genesis right now. Right there, chapter 1, verse 3, verse 2, the earth was without form and void, the darkness was on the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the waters, and God said, let there be light. God created night before he created day. And so the day begins with the night. The nighttime is when a day begins, because that's how the world was created. So all Jewish holidays start at the start of the next day, which is at sundown. So there you go.
Could you read that now in Hebrew?
I could not read it in Hebrew, but I can tell you that the opening line, the opening word of the Bible in Aramaic, in the original Aramaic, is Bereshit, which means in the beginning. Bereshit means in the beginning.
Let's go from the start of the new year to the end of the economy as the dock workers are going on strike, I gather. And you tell me that this is going to actually impact me here in Memphis, Tennessee, which is what matters, of course, most to me.
Well, they aren't going on strike. They have gone on strike.
They have gone off. They walked off. Yeah, right.
So whatever. A third of the U.S. economy is imports and exports. And we all know that. When you open your closet, you know, paper towels and toilet paper doesn't come from overseas. But almost everything that's manufactured, except for big vehicles and airplanes and stuff like that, you know, your blender, your new blouse from the Gap or TJ Maxx or wherever, anything you buy from Amazon, all that. All Apple's iPhones come from overseas. It's all imported in big U.S. ports. The West Coast ports are represented by one union, and the East Coast ports are represented by a different union. The East Coast ports, the legendary International Longshoremen's Association. And they went on strike at midnight over two things: wages and automation. Now, dock workers, being a longshoreman, is one of the best paid blue-collar jobs in the United States. Right now, they make $38 an hour straight time. Well, wait a minute. That's $80,000 a year. That's the average household income. If you make $80,000 a year, you're making
That's pretty good for a job lifting stuff, right?
Or it's a pretty... Well, for a job pushing the buttons.
Pushing the buttons.
We don't actually let the human beings lift up the cargo containers anymore.
$80,000's not nothing. And then if you have two dock workers in the family, that's $160,000.
In a study in 2020 of New York, New Jersey port workers, a third of them were making $200,000 because they were working 100 hours a week. So
my point is, they're making a lot more than the people. Really, even the average salary, I bet, is more than the average salary at the Daily Memphian. So
It's more than the average salary at the Daily Memphian. It's a little more dangerous than the Daily Memphian work, and
maybe
a little more demanding.
Maybe
you don't get to say, oh, it's 17 degrees with the wind blowing off the Hudson River, I'm not going to work this morning. Saddle up and go.
You've never covered a Memphis school board meeting. You know, Memphis City Council.
Excuse me.
A Memphis school board.
No.
Memphis has its own brand of school board meetings, Charles. You do not know what of you speak.
And I've been the equivalent of a longshoreman because I've been out on the deck on the Mississippi.
Anyway, what's going to happen? And why what's this? I hear it's going to affect bananas and like all kinds of stuff. We saw this during COVID. Like there was this backup
the goods
in the ports.
Imported. Half the goods imported into the United States come through East Coast ports. New York, New Jersey, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Savannah. These are big ports. Newport News, all kinds of stuff. Cars. Baltimore's the big car port. 30,000 cars, 1,000 cars a day, 30,000 cars a month. Here's what they want. So there's 45,000 dock workers on this side, 20,000 dock workers on the other side. They want a 77% increase in pay between now and 6 years from now when the next contract expires. That's a lot. from $38 an hour to $63 an hour. That would take every dock worker over six figures. Their point is the shipping companies made a huge amount of money during COVID, big profits, and they got nothing. They want their pay. The other thing is they're resisting automating. You know, the port of Rotterdam, famous European port, I think the biggest port in all of Europe, mostly automated. You can do these jobs robotically. And Rotterdam did it in such a way that people did not lose their jobs, but much, much more efficient. The president of the United States can order the dock workers back to work. That would be Joe Biden currently. And he has said he's not going to do that, at least not immediately. The Taft, he can invoke the Taft-Hartley law. Neither Kamala Harris nor Donald Trump have commented on this directly.
Let's be honest. No one wants to right now because it's right before the election. You don't want to be irritating labor, right? So, yeah.
Right. Also, it's right before the Christmas season. I went on Twitter, and the first tweet that came up when I did one particular search about the dock workers woes, we've got 8,000 advent calendars on a container that's not going to get unloaded if they go on strike, and those advent calendars become useless December 1st. So there you go. I'm kind of cheering for them to get a good raise. The West Coast dock workers got a one-time, quote-unquote, hero bonus for working through the pandemic. But the automation, they ought to modernize these ports. They ought to let us do this in an efficient way so we can compete with everybody else.
All right.
Go ahead.
North Carolina is a total disaster, absolute disaster. Your thoughts on that?
Well, and we talked about this
last week,
a week ago, and I said this was what was going to happen, that the mountains were really the place that was at the most dangerously at risk. The people needed to be ready, the ordinary people, but how do you get ready for having your house literally swept from the hillside? The other problem is that probably a dozen or more major bridges were literally washed away. You can go on Twitter, you can go to the New York Times and the Washington Post and look at photo galleries. Two interstates, I-40 and I-26, each of those interstates has two places in the North Carolina, Eastern Tennessee mountains where the lanes are washed away. So those interstates are non-functional in two different places. And then both North Carolina DOT and Tennessee DOT report somewhere in the vicinity of 6 to 12 bridges washed out on roads where those bridges are the only way in and out. So this is really devastating if you live up a mountain in a town of 80 people. They're using helicopters to get to people. That's what they need
to
do.
Here's the thing. You don't expect in the mountains. If you live in New Orleans or Fort Lauderdale, you board up for a hurricane.
Right.
You don't expect in Western Carolina.
You build your bridges differently. These bridges were washed away by what's called scouring, huge volumes of water literally digging out the pilings. What we need to do is we need to say when we build these bridges, we have to think not of two or three times the normal water flow, but in this case, 10 times the normal water flow. We had to build differently and build safely. And then we got to warn people to get out. You can save yourself.
Do we think this is the changing climate? I don't want to trigger anyone.
Unquestionably the changing climate, unquestionably. And I want to say is, we're in the middle of spending something like, you know, $1 trillion on infrastructure in the next 5 years that has been passed by Congress. We need to spend it not like it's 1985, build beautiful 1985-style bridges. We need to spend it like it's 2035 and 2040. Think about what kind of infrastructure. You know, they don't have cell service. They don't have electricity. You know, solar deployment. Make the cell towers solar. There's all kinds of ways of thinking ahead. So, if you have $50, give it to the American Red Cross to help these people recover. It's going to be a year or 2 years to build these towns back.
We got a vice presidential debate tonight, Tim Walz and J.D. Vance. If Jim Gaffigan showed up as Tim Walz, that would be fine with me. He was terrific on Saturday Night Live as Tim Walz. He was magnificent in that role. Your thoughts on the VP debate?
You know, this is such a weird face-off in styles, right? You got J.D. Vance, for all of his heritage in rural America, went to Yale Law School and then worked for a hedge fund, right? He's a ping, ping, ping. He's like you and me. He wants to square off. He's got a witticism or an important point he wants to unleash. That's not J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance was for 20 years.
You mean
a high school history
Tim Walz?
Teacher.
Tim Walz.
I'm sorry. Yeah, Tim Walz was for 20 years a high school history teacher. He did four terms in Congress, so he knows what that's like. He's been the governor of a big state. He's in his second term, so he knows how to debate. But he's not the rat-a-tat. I think this is going to be a weird face-off. I predict J.D. Vance runs verbal circles around Tim Walz. I also predict there hasn't been a vice presidential debate that mattered to the outcome, and I can't believe
this.
Well,
the one that I remember is Lloyd Benson saying to Dan Quayle, Jack Wendy was a friend of mine, and you, sir, are no Jack Kennedy. And guess who won? Dan Quayle. Dan Quayle got put.
Guess who went on to be the vice president?
Yeah, I'm saying. Won the election. Lloyd Benson put him in a box, and Dan Quayle ended up as vice president. Koerig's in trouble. Why is Koerig in trouble?
This is such a satisfying moment. We don't have a Koerig. One of the reasons we don't have a Koerig is the little cups, little pods. They call them K-cups. It's a ridiculous quantity of waste for a single cup of coffee. I understand that it's convenient, maybe in a hotel room, maybe in an office setting, but Koerig has always said, oh, don't worry, don't fret, they're recyclable. Sometimes they provide a little bin for you to recycle them. And they switched a few years ago from number 7 plastic to number 5 plastic. Number 5, much more recyclable. They're not recyclable. They've got a filter. They've got a foil cap. They're filled with coffee grounds. You know what contaminates coffee recycling? Plastic recycling? Coffee grounds. It's like throwing your Chinese food or your Indian food containers in the recycling bin with the lid slapped on and a third of the food left in and saying, it's recyclable. Anyway, they said in their 2019 and 2020 annual reports released to the public, filed with the SEC, that they were recyclable. And one of the issues of Koerig sales is the pods and are they recyclable. Some people are uncomfortable with that. And they knew at that point that the two largest recyclers in America had said, we will not accept them from municipal recycling programs. They're too small. They're too contaminated. No. And you know what's interesting? You're required by the U.S. government to be truthful in every statement you make in a quarterly report or an annual report. And they were fined for lying about the recyclability. It's small, 1.5 million. It's Koerig, Dr. Pepper, kind of a weird merger, but Koerig and Dr. Pepper are the same.
Would it be interesting if we held our politicians to the fined if lying standard? But we don't. But Koerig fined for lying about their recycling.
Right. And people often say, do big companies, you know, tell the truth? And how do you know they're not lying? And the one thing you can say is that the numbers, like I've been studying Walmart for 15 years. I've never caught Walmart in an explicit untruth, in a lie, in a document that they have issued, or even something particularly misleading. The numbers and the assertions in things like sustainability reports and annual reports and quarterly reports are correct because they have to be and because the folks at the SEC go over them.
What are you going to say?
If you're using a Koerig, that's fine. Recycle other stuff, but don't do it under the illusion that the little K-cups are recycled.
I'll be honest. Really, I'm sort of torn on this. I don't use Koerig for that exact reason. I don't like all the plastic. I sort of have this idea that it make it taste different because of the plastic, and I don't like it seems wasteful, whatever. Having said that, the number of Koerigs that I'm going to drink over a lifetime, who cares? I mean, I know that's not what I'm supposed to think.
Building,
right.
though, in downtown Memphis, or right. a break room at one of the warehouses where people are working in Memphis, or a big
pot of coffee's better. Get a pot of coffee. Make yourself a pot of coffee here on International Coffee Day. Today is International Coffee Day. If you missed the open, Charles. Okay, Motel 6 is back in the news. Why Motel 6? Why?
This is so funny. Who even knew this? Motel 6, the original, quote-unquote, literally cheap motel. It's named Motel 6, of course. Why? Do you know why?
Probably because it was originally $6.
Rooms used to cost $6 each, $6 a night. When it was founded in 1962.
Now it's Motel 129, Motel 89. Now it's Motel 89. What do you think it costs?
Okay, well, how about Motel 500 million. Motel 6 has been owned by the high-end hedge fund Blackstone since 2012, a long time. And they sold it about 10 days ago for $550 million to an Indian hotel chain called OYO. There are actually OYO-branded hotels around the world, and about 300 in the U.S. I've never seen an OYO hotel, but now they own Motel.
There's one in Vegas, right off the strip, across from the MGM Grand.
There you go, Jeffrey's.
Well, famously, you're right about that. They also bought the Hooters Casino.
Yeah,
in Vegas, OYO owns that. Anyway, they bought Motel 6. Let's see, there's 1,500 Motel 6 locations. They don't cost $6. The average price of a quote-unquote economy hotel, and they're really the big one, this year has been $79 a night. It seems high, but if you try a Hampton Inn or a Fairfield Inn...
No, those are $139, $169 now.
Yeah, those have gone to the 129 even with the AAA card. Anyway, kind of wonderful that this Motel 6 is going to get a revival in celebration. I love this about the Wall Street Journal. The Wall Street Journal had its travel writer check in to the single most expensive Motel 6 in America, which is in Santa Barbara, California. Yeah. Jeff, it's 200 steps from the beach. Motel 6, Santa Barbara, 200 steps from the beach. What do you think it costs the Wall Street Journal a night?
Motel 6, Santa Barbara. It's a motel. It's still a Motel 6. I'm going to say $245.
$426 a night.
Holy smokes.
The nearby competing Hilton Garden Inn was $800 a night. $426 a night. She actually said it was a good value compared to what was around. Nice room. Her main complaint, no coffee maker. $426. No Keurig. But the owner had just bought it.
You're gone now, Charles. You blipped out. Something happened. Hello.
I'm sitting here with my corded headphones.
All right, go ahead.
There was no coffee maker. The owner, she talked to the owner. Most Motel 6s are franchised, and like McDonald's, and he is desperate to put coffee makers in the room. That's his first improvement. Then he's going to buy better mattresses. Anyway, she said, if you're going to Santa Barbara and you want to be 200 steps from the beach, the Motel 6 is actually fine. I thought that was kind of nice. But there you go. Motel 6, thriving. Can we go right to the thing that's thriving?
I was literally going to say, no, we're going to go. We're about to end here, and we've been putting off this one story for a long time. I need to get it in, and then if we have time for others, we will. I want to know about dog strollers in South Korea.
This is really incredible. Again, we got to credit the Wall Street Journal. In 2023, so we all know about falling birth rates on the developed, quote-unquote, wealthy nations world, South Korea has the lowest birth rate. Replacement birth rate is 2.1 children per adult woman on average. Some have two, some have three. 2.1 gets you, quote-unquote, replacement. That keeps you even. Some people die young. The birth rate in South Korea is 0.72. The average woman doesn't have a child. And so the indigenous population of South Korea is falling. Their population would be falling except for immigration, creates all kinds of labor problems and economic problems. But here's the thing. Pets have become crazy popular. Dog strollers in all of 2023 outsold baby strollers by number, by volume. And also in the first 6 months of this year, they have. And the labor ministry said, what I worry, the labor minister, Kim Moon Soo, said, what I worry about is that young people are not loving each other. Instead, they love their dogs and they carry them around and they don't get married and they don't have children. The current president of South Korea is married with no kids, and he and his wife have 10 cats and dogs.
Oh, that's leadership.
We do not want to fall into that world.
J.D. Vance would have a field day with those people. He would.
The most popular high-end pet stroller costs $1,100. It's called the Air Buggy. People buy an $1,100 stroller to push their dogs around. I never did buy an $1,100 stroller.
My dogs prefer to walk themselves, although Willa's getting to the point where she might like an extra large. She might like an extra large. Do you have one more story you want to get to real quick before the music cranks up?
Very quickly, the last full-size Kmart, you may not have even known it exists, is closing October 20th in 3 weeks in Bridgehampton. At one point, Kmart had 2,000 stores, opened the same year as Walmart. So look, Walmart stands astride the entire globe. Kmart, one final store.
What was the difference? What happened? What
was the difference was good management. The difference was good management. Kmart couldn't compete with Walmart's low prices. Then Target came along, kind of, inexpensive but fancy, branded. The best thing I found reading about the closing of the last store, there's a little store, a mini store in Miami. Martha Stewart wanted to buy Kmart in 2015. And one of the people in her company, Martha Stewart Living, said this would be a really bad idea. And in 2015, even in 2015, she regretted it. She said, we should have bought Kmart. Martha Stewart famously produced a line of home goods and fashions for Kmart. To sort of help Kmart compete with Target. It would have been fun to have Martha Stewart.
All right, Charles, thank you very much. How do I greet you?
Happy New Year, and have a good week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.